Reading from the Bhagavad Gita. Those who seek shelter in me, O Arjuna, are of four types: those who are in distress, those who seek understanding, those who seek power in this world or the next, and those who are already wise.
Of those four types, I want to deal with just two of them, so we'll start there. In America, there was a man who did a great deal of work helping people deal with terminal illnesses when someone was diagnosed with cancer or something else that was going to take their life, especially at a young age. He wrote books and he conducted seminars trying to help people find a way to be at peace with those kinds of changes. And one of the seminars that he gave, I'd never had to face this personally or no one close to me, but I was interested in his work. And he would have a seminar in which people would come who were going to have, they knew their lives were going to end very soon. And they would start out the seminar, he would have them make a list of everything they were going to be disappointed because they were going to miss it. I'll never hold my grandchild. I won't dance at my daughter's wedding. You know, I won't be able to help my parents in their old age. Whatever it might be, there'd be a long list of because I have this illness and will leave, I won't be able to do these things. Then he would have them do another exercise. And that exercise would be a list of all the things they're going to escape from having to deal with because they're going to die early. I'm never going to have to really work at my career. I'm never going to have to reconcile with my childhood friend who has been so mean to me. I'm never going to have to clean out the spare bedroom and really decide what to do with all those things. Whatever the list might be, and it often was a long list, that it's a relief because I'm going to leave the planet without settling these debts. And you would think that the main work would be about the things you're disappointed about. But in actuality, the main work was about all those things that you thought you got to be rescued from. Somewhere in his writing, Swami Kriyananda uses the phrase, many people are just waiting to be rescued. And that phrase has had a lot of power in my own life, and is very directly related to our Gita commentary today. Those who seek shelter in God often do so in a state of distress. I mean, I've observed in our communities around the world, really, if everything in your life is going perfectly, it doesn't occur to you to make any changes. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have complicated outward difficulties. People's karma is different. I was born with an intense desire to be happy, even though I was never really unhappy. Everything in my life flowed along very well, but there was always this belief that if I did not ground my life in happiness, everything else was going to prove ephemeral and unsatisfying in the end. When I asked Swamiji about it, of course, he said, well, you've suffered in other lifetimes. You've carried over that memory of disappointment and lack of fulfillment and are keen not to have it happen again. But the power of suffering to move us toward God, in a very sweet way, Master said he argued with Divine Mother about the necessity to make her children suffer. But Master had to admit that it was often in the great hour of suffering was the moment when people would turn toward the divine. So we have to accept that that is a natural part of it, that the mere fact that we're a bit like customers having too much misery and wanting to exchange that misery for happier times, the Bhagavad Gita itself tells us that this is what we do. So the question is not whether that desire to be happy, that desire to escape suffering, is motivating us. It depends on what we do about that feeling. It was very interesting to me many years ago. My husband and I have been assigned since 1986 to manage and to lead the community in Ananda, Palo Alto. Several times, twice particularly, during all the years since then, Swamiji has raised the thought that we might move to another community or to another area of the country or of the world and start another community. I actually always thought that I would move often, and I'm surprised that I haven't. And the second time that he raised that thought and then decided that we would just stay where we were, he actually made the statement that we would probably live in that community for the rest of our lives. And I began to really reflect inside my own heart, even though I love where I live and I love what I'm doing, how many things I was not facing because I just assumed that eventually I would get to run away from them. I mean, it was as simple as a back closet that was just full of junk, a corner of the garden where nothing would grow, another devotee that I just really did not like and did not want to learn to like, but hoped someday I could just drive away and then never have to think about that person again. And I began to ask myself, how does this serve me spiritually? To be holding all these different pieces, sort of like, I'll accept God, I'll accept his wisdom, I'll accept that everything except is sent from my own good, but these parts I refuse to deal with. How much can God help me if I am picking and choosing among his various gifts? I mean, think of it in just human terms in your relationships with other people. If you want to help someone and you offer them this amount of help and they say, well, I'll take this and I'll take this and I'll take that, but the rest of it, you just take it back. We can't ever get into a flow of energy if there isn't full cooperation, if there isn't full cooperation from the one we're trying to help. And we have to understand that even though there are incomprehensible divine elements in our relationship with God and Guru, that the essential qualities of it are not different than the way we relate to everything and everyone else in our life. And this is where this Gita verse, we seek God, there are four types. We seek God because we're in distress. And so often our prayers to God are, do something about this. Isn't that so? I'm suffering, do something about this. Please pray, people will write to me, that my son get into the university he wants, that my daughter get pregnant, that the child, you know, be outstanding in the ways I want him, that my financial problems get solved. Do something about it, we say to God. Thinking, I mean, that's okay, he has the power. If we pray, maybe he can. The difficulty with that, and we have to admit, and even the Gita says it right here, this is why people seek God. It's better than not turning to God at all. Swamiji often would tell us that there's many rituals for accomplishing just about any worldly desire that you have, even power over your enemies, things that you would think the scriptures wouldn't talk about. Swamiji's answer was, the sages knew that this is what people want anyway, so they thought they might as well direct them toward a divine source to get what they're going to be seeking anyway. So if the only way that you can pray to God is asking him to rescue you, better that you should still pray. But the second kind way to seek God that I'm talking about today is for understanding. And understanding is an entirely different reality than merely asking to be rescued. Because as soon as we begin to seek understanding, what we're trying to see is we're trying to see it from the bigger picture. I mean, there's two ways to speak to God. One is, why are you doing this to me? And the other is, why are you doing this to me? In other words, what What goodness is being offered to me through this terribly difficult situation? Swami Kriyananda makes an extremely unadorned, inescapable statement in his Patanjali commentaries. It's just one sentence. It says, we suffer in this life in whatever way we have inflicted suffering on others. That is not a very popular sentence. That is not something, that's not what people put on their mirror, you know, so they could see every morning. What we want to see every morning are things like, God loves me and every good thing will come to me. But if we're really going to seek not merely to be rescued, but actually to understand, we have to be really willing to think about things in the broadest, most impersonal way. I referred in another talk that I gave, I want to bring it up here, to an extremely strange experience I had that was so vivid for me. The context was very odd. My husband and I were learning to scuba dive. And the first year that we learned, we had a lot of fun going under the water. But I'd had one slightly nervous moment in doing it. And eventually we both stopped doing it because we could never get really comfortable being underwater. But this was the second year we went, and I had the memory of this anxiety, and I was actually almost physically sick because I was so nervous. I literally had pains in my stomach. And I couldn't sleep because I was so frightened. Now, of course, I didn't have to do this, but it was very unusual for me to experience so much fear, and I thought it was important that I face into it. So I prayed for comfort. I prayed for Divine Mother to comfort me in my anxiety, and I got no response. It was like Divine Mother had gone completely to another plane of existence, or she had cut me out entirely. I had no sense of attunement with the divine. Now, here's another interesting fact when you seek God for understanding and not merely to be rescued. When something uncomfortable happens, instead of continually to demand, Divine Mother, come and take care of me, I thought to ask the other question. Why am I being abandoned? Why am I being left alone? And much to my surprise, but greatly to my benefit, a picture of this individual that I had known for many years popped into my mind. From my point of view, he was not an attractive person. He did not have an attractive personality. He didn't have an attractive physical body. There was very little about this man that I liked. And even though I managed to be civil to him, my heart was always closed to him. And I had this sudden realization, strange as it might seem, that being in a foreign country, afraid to go scuba diving, and having no sense of Divine Mother's compassion to me was a straight line to my lack of compassion for this other man. The reason, of course, that he was unattractive is because he was unhappy. And above all, what he needed from me was compassion. And it was like you suffer in the ways that you inflict suffering. Even so small a thing as another human being looks at us and just wants genuine, sincere kindness, not politeness, not being covering it, but genuine from the heart compassion. So I turned this way, you see, but I had created a universe in which compassion was doled out, not in which compassion was offered whenever it was needed. You see, we seek God in times of distress, but if we seek God for deeper understanding, then much more can come to us. Because you see, what happens when we understand is all of a sudden our relationship with the divine becomes dynamic. Master makes a very strong point in all of his writing that we should never pray to God as a beggar, that we should never say, oh, please, I'm so helpless, that beautiful chant, door of my heart. There's a verse, apparently, that Master did not translate, which is, I sit, you know, as a poor beggar outside the door of the divine. Master refused to translate that particular line. He said we should not be beggars before God. And if we're only asking God to rescue us, but not standing strong and saying, tell me what my part in this suffering is, and rescue me by teaching me, and then giving me the strength and power to accept, you see how much more dynamic that relationship can become? Think about your relationships with the people in your life. Those who passively sit there and only want you to fix things for them, what kind of a relationship do you have with them? Those who creatively engage and want to really participate in making things better and making things new and making themselves a better person. This is the great challenge of life at all times. After I heard about that particular exercise for people facing a premature death or an unexpectedly early, it's never premature in the divine sense because you're drawn out according to God's rhythm, but early from our point of view. I started watching how often in my mind I imagined that I could postpone something until the point where I didn't have to face it. And I began to think very, very deeply, when do I think it won't be now? Do you know what I mean? We think that the future, somehow in the future, we're not going to still be conscious exactly as we are. When I was writing the book about Swami Kriyananda as we have known him, I struggled to write that book for several years. I had a very complicated relationship with writing, with creativity. It was just my own karma that I had to go through. I knew for a certainty that I had a responsibility to write that book, and I simply couldn't manifest it. I worked literally for a couple of years, and I had nothing. It wasn't like I was halfway through. I had nothing. I had not one paragraph in the book. And Swami Kriyananda, because he knew me well, he said to me, well, if it's not working, why don't you just give it up? And so it was sort of like God had answered my prayer. I was going to be rescued from this extremely hard task. And it was a very interesting moment, because if Swamiji had endorsed a line of action, then I would feel very comfortable going into it. But I could feel he wasn't. He was testing me. And as soon as he told me, you can escape from this difficulty, I was very pleased to feel rising up within me, no, thank you, sir, I will not. And I said, bad enough. I've had to see this karma in this lifetime. I definitely do not want to face it in my next life. It will be no easier the next time than it is this time. So every time we find ourselves wanting to pray to God in our distress, seek shelter, as the Gita puts it, only shelter from the necessity to expand our awareness to meet the challenge, just ask ourselves, bad enough that I have to face it now, do I want to also see it later? And that doesn't mean that we can always be perfect in our responses. Swamiji gives us a beautiful image that is really worth considering. He says, when karma comes to us, it has a wave of energy of a certain magnetism, whether that's long, difficult lifetime karma or one challenging moment in which everything shifts. He says it's like a wave of energy. And if we feel that it's going to sink over and drown us, it's because the wave is this big and our consciousness is only half or a quarter the size. Now, if in the moment we can expand our awareness to be the same size as the wave, expand our compassion, our courage, our faith, our energy just to go forward step by step, he said you can overcome the whole karma like that. You can make great spiritual progress if in the moment you rise to meet it. He said, what most people do, however, is that gradually any wave of energy begins to lose energy and becomes smaller and smaller. So often what we do is we stay exactly the same size and we just wait until the wave of karma has shrunk to be the same size that we are, and we say, look, I've overcome it. And In a sense, we have, because we're still here and we're still trying. But why? Why settle for that? You know, people are always asking, why does it take so long to realize God? Why do these things go on and on? It's much more in our hands than we realize. Every moment's response, Yoganandaji says, take care of the minutes, and incarnations will take care of themselves. That's such a fascinating thought, isn't it? But you see, we realize that our destiny is being determined just minute by minute. Whatever response I have to what God has given me now is who I am in this moment. And then the next moment I have another opportunity. And if one is always also, you see, attuned to this moment, this means we're always living in the now. We're always living in that moment in eternity. And this whole sense of time and distance and anguishing monotony, it actually becomes quite irrelevant. The question only is, what is Divine Mother asking of me right now? And how much of myself can I give to the right response? And then the next minute and the next. And pretty soon, as Yoganandaji says so beautifully, the whole incarnation has passed in a blissful relationship with God and Guru.